Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly, all streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 122. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson. Tom, what is significant about the number 122, I wonder?
Well, let me look it up on Wikipedia. I didn't know you were going to ask that. 122 is a natural number. It follows 121.
Yeah.
And it is the fire emergency telephone number in Austria. Is that what
that
you meant
explains,
by that?
That explains so much
no,
more.
I know. You meant it's a non-totient, since there is no integer with exactly 122 coprimes.
Right. And it's two away from my favorite number. Did you know that 125 is my favorite number?
That's three away, then.
That's actually true. Oh, is it three? I'm sorry. Whoops. Good math on this guy. But I'm telling you, man, 122 is significant for other reasons. I guess we can get into that as we go.
Yes. As we mentioned on the last episode, this is the last episode of Forecast. We're sorry to see it go, but we feel like 122 episodes is a good run. We posted it up on the web, forecastpodcast.com, the whole explanation. If you want to blame anyone, if you're angry, blame the government.
Yeah, always.
They're responsible for it. No, blame me. I'm the one who said, like, well, you know, the viewership's going down. We haven't been getting sponsorships. Do we want to keep doing this? Scott and I have got lots of stuff we're collaborating on that we could spend other time on. And Leo said, well, you can keep doing it if you want to, at a cost to him, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, let me talk to Scott. I talked to Scott and I said, should we keep doing it? I kind of feel like maybe its time has come and I don't want to push it past... push it into the ground. And Scott, you said, all right, fine.
Yeah, you don't want the Fonz to actually jump the shark. We want to stop before they even get to Hawaii and try to find the elusive tiki doll.
I could never have said it better.
We want to stop it while Ralph Mouth and Richie Cunningham and the original guy that wasn't, what's his name, that played that guy that ran the restaurant, whose name I can't remember. We want them to be who they are. We don't want to go past that. And I think a lot of times, and in all honesty, a lot of times shows, whether they be, you know, mainstream television shows or a movie series, they don't know when to quit sometimes. And I'm not saying you and I are about to jump the shark at all. But when all of these factors sort of came into play, it was easy to look at it and say, no, we're going to do like Seinfeld. We're going to pull out kind of a, you know, the peak of things. We're going to go out while we're still a relevant thing and we're not old, weird old men predicting strange futures, you know, full of conspiracy theories and things.
So we waited a little too long because essentially that's today's show. Joining us, our first guest, Scott Johnson, the man behind the Frog Pants Network. Host of The Instance, Final Score, The Morning Stream, and many, many other fine podcasts that are too numerous to mention because I can't remember them all.
Film Sack, Autopilot. You should probably remember Autopilot.
I've heard of Autopilot. It's a good show.
You heard of that one?
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, people keep saying, will you and Tom do another show together? And I'm like,
we do.
Dude, we're doing another show together. It is on now. Like, this Wednesday is our finale for season one, and we are planning season two.
Oh, yeah. There will definitely be listening to a second season of Autopilot. I'm doing FSL tonight on the Frog Pants Network. Scott's not on that show. He's on that show sometimes. But Justin Robert Young, my co-host, that season kicks off. We had a preview episode. That season kicks off kind of right. Autopilot has its last episode this Wednesday. Yep. And then FSL tonight coming on Saturday with week one.
Yep. Yep. It's kind of like we are the you are my midsummer replacement.
That's right.
for Autopilot. Or maybe it's the other way around. But yeah, the bottom line is we have collaborations that go far and wide, certainly more than just Forecast. But one of them we can't quite announce yet. We'll announce it at Nerdtacular 2012 in a week and a half. right here in Salt Lake City.
Keep your ears out for a coming announcement out of Nerdtacular.
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. It's not necessarily podcast related. That's the only hint I'm going to drop.
Whoa.
There you go.
Spoiler alert.
I know.
Also joining us is me and the chat room. We've had the chat room on as a guest before. Thank you for coming back, chat room. We really appreciate you being here.
You guys are awesome. Dedicated, the dedicated bunch who are here every Monday. We heard from so many of you over the last couple of weeks when the story broke that Forecast was maybe going to go away. And so many nice comments about how much they'll miss the show and how they liked the kind of creative thinking it sort of spawned in their own heads. And, you know, it was a show that they could count on to make them think in different ways. So, yeah, sometimes to laugh, sometimes to maybe be concerned about our future. But for the most part, it was a way to sort of expand what we think humans are capable of. And I'm glad that that's the legacy of the show.
You know, the format is Creative Commons licensed. If you would like to play at home, we could release it into the public. You may not be able to call it Forecast or not. That's up to Leo. but you certainly could do a show like this, and I wouldn't stop you.
No, heck no. In fact, I might even listen to it.
I might. Yeah. I would definitely listen to it. I might even listen to it. I don't know if you're any good. We'll see. We do want to thank our final sponsor, Netflix, streaming you thousands of TV episodes and movies. We're talking about Autopilot. You want to watch some pilots of television shows? Netflix is a great source for that sort of thing. And you can try it free. Watch it on your Android phone. Watch it on your Apple phone. Watch it on your Microsoft box, on your Sony thing. All of those devices out there can play the Netflix. So give it a try. 30 days free at Netflix.com/twit. Or if you're already a Netflix subscriber, pass that URL around. Let folks know about it. Share the love. Pay it forward. All those cliches. Netflix.com/twit. I use it. Scott's using it. You should probably at least try it for free. Come on. Netflix.com/twit. We thank Netflix for their support of Forecast.
Did you just name the next generation consoles the Microsoft box and the PlayStation thing? Are you already forecasting?
Oh, I forgot the Nintendo doohickey.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. They're calling out the Nintendo D. If you'd get that straight, that'd be great.
All right. Well, we're going to go a little old school for Forecast here and revert to our previous format since the new
format
killed
right?
the show.
Wasn't it our day one format?
It was our day one format, exactly. And we're going to do short-term, long-term, and crazy-ass predictions. Starting with you, Scott Johnson, things you think will happen sooner rather than later. Maybe in the next few years.
This is a little weird. For those who maybe listen to the show for a while, you may remember a couple of Valentine's Day episodes where we reversed things by having our wives ask us questions and had them on the show to kind of celebrate Valentine's Day, but also to put us on the spot. This is similar to that, except this is the first time you and I have ever, on the history of the show, asked each other.
Yeah, I know.
What you think the future is. So here goes. My short-term prediction. Tom Merritt, I believe in the next 10 years, we are going to see a large number of what are now 10 and 13-year-olds, all right, kids my son's age.
In the next 10 years, a large number of 10 or 13-year-olds will be 20 or 23.
You're right. They will be coming of age. They'll be in college or finishing college or just entering college, whatever their time scale may be. There are going to be a great number of them that have been raised on a big bulk government cheese chunk of technology. And they have been eating that their whole young lives. They do not know a time when there was no internet as we know it today. They were born in a time where this was already happening. And so they've had this unique ability to grow up in a very specific time frame. What makes it interesting in my mind is that when it comes to gaming, they're playing things now that will impact what we play in 10 years. In other words, because they're 10 and 13, what they are into now, I believe, really informs the kinds of video games that we'll see in the future. And I believe that specifically because of the impact, culturally and otherwise, of Minecraft and games like it, that these now 10 to 13-year-olds who will be graduating 20 to 23-year-olds in 10 years will be making video games whose hook, whose gimmick, whose main mechanic is building stuff, making stuff, and way less of the linear storyline, the epic tale, the adventure story, that sort of thing that we're into today. I think those things will still exist. They'll still have an audience. You know, Nick can enjoy a good Halo game, but most of the time he just likes goofing around and making stuff. And it just turns out Minecraft has given him all the ability in the world to sit down and do that. And as a result, I just think that that kind of thinking and those kinds of mechanics and the eventual ability for technology to let us do much, much more in a sandbox environment is going to make video games in the future be a lot more like Minecraft and a lot less like, I don't know, Max Payne 3. You know, I think that is the trend.
Now, normally at this point, after the guest makes the prediction, then Scott reacts to the prediction, but it'd be kind of awkward to make Scott react to his own prediction.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep an eye on the chat room. Some people are already saying, like, that sounds like a horrible future.
It does.
Kids don't play Minecraft.
To some, it sounds like a horrible future, but I mean, I've had to kind of come to grips with it. I get in front of Minecraft and I enjoy it for what it is. And I think there's some neat stuff going on. And I like the fact that it's essentially, you know, it's electronic Legos is what it is. But you kind of do it on your own terms. And there's a lot of modding going on and scripting and things that are fun. But I noticed that Nick is about 1,000 times better typist than he was before he started playing Minecraft and got a hold of some, you know, admin codes and things he could use on the server that he's a part of. So I'm seeing him gain skills in areas that school would have bored him to tell him to do it. He'd have to do it anyway, but I'm seeing him thrive with it here because it's something that really inspires him. But more than that, when I sit in front of Minecraft, I go, oh my gosh, I can build the Sphinx and a whole Egyptian city and base it on whatever. Whoa, that sounds like a lot of work and I don't do it. I'm more interested in seeing what other people have done. Right?
The roller coasters and the sure. You know, scale models of cities. And
sure, and triggers and dynamite and missile checkers and triggers and all these kind of cool things you can do in the game environment. He looks at the world. He sees a big flat or a generated environment. And he does the opposite. He thinks about what is it I can build here. Now, I know some of that is just age. When you're young, you know, that's why kids spend entire Saturdays playing with their Legos, and you know, adults in their 30s or 40s don't. You know, they look at that and think, that was fun, I loved it when I was a kid, but if I got way involved in that now, I'm not sure where I'd end up. So I want to defer. Some of this will probably be an age thing, and maybe when they're our age, it'll be the same sort of problem. They won't be as into that sort of thing as they are now. But I still can't help but think the young video game designers that aren't designers yet but will be one day, their inspiration is going to come from stuff like this. It's just going to come from Halo or Call of Duty or whatever. They're going to be more inspired by things that aren't prepackaged experiences. Call of Duty or Modern Warfare 3, let's say. You go buy that game, and from top to bottom, it is a scripted, handheld experience. You know what you got to do, where to go, when to do it, and it is presented to you more like a movie with some interaction. I would argue that that is heavier on the movie side than it is on the interaction side. Still a great time, still fun, whatever. But that's really the kind of game it is. Minecraft, very different experience. You go in and you're kind of like, go for it. Here's this world. Do with it what you will. And that's a very different way of thinking. And I think that thinking at their young age, when their minds are still being formed, will translate to game ideas in the future that will be pretty mind-blowing, but again, have this kind of core system of let's build something. Let's make something. Let's let the user have more control over this world. Let them be the god of this world. Now, you and I grew up on Populous and... Well, they can grow up on it, but we played those kinds of games. We played a lot of Civ growing up. And then again, when I say growing up, in our 20s. And those, I feel like I was still growing up in my 20s. But those kinds of experiences have some of that in it. But I think there are things we aren't even thinking of, that the kind of gameplay or the kind of, I don't know, the kind of free form ability you have in a game like Minecraft will give these young minds. And when they're old enough and we're crotchety old dudes being a, you know, mad because somebody ruined our rose garden, they're going to be making games that look very different from today.
I always think that the next generation of games are reacting to the limitations of the previous games. So, for example, we had side-scrollers for a long time. And the big limitation was that I'd like to go left or right. Or I guess forward or backward, depending on how you look at it. But sure. I want to go in those other two directions, but I can only go left to right. I can only side scroll. And so we got first person shooters. And that was the revelation. It's like, no, it's from my perspective and I can go any direction I want. It's amazing. Yeah. What do you think the limitations of Minecraft are that the next generation of game designers will be motivated to try to overcome?
Well, I think that things like that's a great question, Tom. Here's how I'm going to answer it. Minecraft is made up of geometrically similar objects, blocks, okay? Mm-hmm. And they're mathematically, the way they're distanced from each other is the same. It's never any different than that. There's some that are short, but they're always short by increments that you could divide by, right? So you can say, well, this thing that looks like a cake, you can divide it four times, but when it's a full cake, it's the size of a full block. And by the time you cut it down, it's a fourth of a block. And anyway, the whole world is sort of understood in these ways. Now, a lot of
that's
the
done
gameplay,
on purpose.
Right. Exactly. It's not some limitation. It's actually probably the reason the game is as big as it is, honestly. It's a mechanic that was chosen so early on that everybody can get their head around. I can put blocks down. I can break blocks up. It's all in blocks. I get it. It's a quantifiable working thing. I think that these games, and I think sooner than later, so when I say 10 years, I think that's even way too far off. I just think it's interesting to see what people will make in 10 years when it comes to these kind of games. But I see a day in the not too distant future where somebody probably already working on it will out Minecraft, or at least try to. And there'll be a huge uproar about, Minecraft's old school and it's the only way to go. And they'll meet people who love the new thing and there'll be fights like there always is in the video game community. But somebody will come up with a way to make it much more organic. So instead of these things being blocks, you're shaping terrain in the way that you would with a paintbrush or with a sculptor's tool. You'll be creating, you'll be molding worlds into photorealistic landscapes and cityscapes. And those cities will come alive with life and you'll be able to sort of, you know, mesh ideas intrinsic in things like SimCity.
Did you see the new SimCity?
It looks insane. I cannot freaking wait for that
Speaking
game.
Of like what I wanted to do in the original SimCity coming to life, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of it. Like if they have really, I don't know who went ahead and greenlit that, but good on EA or whoever there did, because they've really gone back to what, not only what made SimCity great in the first place, but now it feels like the actual realization of what it was always meant to be or what they wanted, and they just limited by tech or by, ability or whatever. Now we've got something coming that's very special in that way. And again, I feel like that game's resurgence in the minds of some players, you could point to things, experiences anyway, like Minecraft and say, well, in a very real way, SimCity is playing off of some of those things. And, mm-hmm. and it itself is playing off some of the ideas that were introduced in the original SimCity and other city building games. But imagine a world where you had that kind of control from the very bottom all the way to the very top, the physicality of everything, be able to do it in large swoofs, not a word. I'll just say it right now. Swoofs is not a word. Or do it micromanage with every little pixel, but one way or the other, create your own worlds that are living, breathing experiences, simulations, you know, just fantastic stuff. And I think somebody's already doing that. And you know what? SimCity may be a huge stepping stone in that direction because they're playing off some nostalgia for the SimCity series. But they're also bringing out a game that looks like it will redefine it. And if they truly can do that, that'll be a huge step toward this sort of thing I'm talking about. But I just feel like as the technology gets bigger, as much as I love to consume something somebody has crafted for me, a great artist, a great writer, a great animator has made a film or a video game and said, here are our characters, here's why you should sympathize with them, and here is the goal at hand, and here's the world you're going to escape in. I love that. And I'll always love that. And I think people always will love that as a general population. We're going to always like that. And we love stories. And this is just another way to deliver those. But I do think we're going to start veering into territory where we're making our own. Our own stories are coming to life. And we're doing it with tools and abilities within game environments that allow you to just take it so much further than somebody else could prepare one for you. It's always interesting. It's more interesting for me, especially in PC games, to see what people make out of it than what the original thing was in the first place. Minecraft is not that interesting on the face of it. It's enough, but it's not that interesting. What's interesting is what people did with it. What's interesting is to see what people do with the Half-Life engine, what they mod Half-Life 1 to do or Half-Life 2 to do, what kinds of game experiences come out of that. There are entire industries, sub-industries in the video game business that are based on a single free-to-play mod that was made for Warcraft 3 back in 2005. And that would be the Dota and other MOBA games.
Are you allowed to call it Dota anymore?
Yeah, I think you can still. Do I have to put quotes around it? I don't know. But you see what I'm saying? Like these, it's way more interesting to me what somebody makes from that stuff than it ever is. Like right now, there's this thing called DayZ. It's a zombie add-on for a game called Arma 2, and a lot of people have heard of it in the chat. But the Arma 2 is this really super uber realistic military simulation kind of game. I think it's European. I want to say made. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Somebody made a mod called DayZ. And it's essentially a zombie survival game, but not like one you've ever played before, that encourages kinds of emergent gameplay we haven't seen maybe ever. And that thing's just catching on like wildfire. It's made Arma 2, which you have to own to run it. Like the number one game on Steam for weeks on end. And that thing's old. Like Arma 3 is right around the corner. And this thing's not even that new of a game. And yet from this emergent gameplay comes all of this attention and interest. And I love that. Like that is where games are going to go. It's not so much important what your crafted experience is to me. It's maybe a neat thing I'll never forget. But I'm more interested to see what other people do with it. It's like YouTube. It's like podcasting. It's like anything else. The medium isn't the important thing. It's what are the voices we haven't heard yet that aren't the big commercial, you know, 200-person studio voices. I want to hear what guy in his basement has to say.
Ken from Chicago in the chat room says, we want to experience other people's stories, then use them as a jumping off point, tell stories in that universe, or modify those universes. I think that's exactly what you're talking about.
Very well said, yeah. I think there's just going to be more and more of that.
All right, I guess we'll move it over to my prediction. You ready for...
Yeah, I am. So, Tom, let me ask you. Here we go.
Okay, okay.
Let's pass the baton over to Tom Merritt over there. Tom Merritt, what is your short-term prediction? What do you see in the immediate future?
Wow. Okay. I came up with a few, but I guess I'll go with this one.
Okay.
Water wars for vat-grown meat. No. Short-term prediction. I think within 5 years, the internet will carry all the information into your house. No matter what it is, telephone, TV, just like natural gas is a bad metaphor because natural gas still does a lot in a lot of places. But electricity, you know, you don't have a water wheel, you don't have a lot of, you know, hand pumps. Electricity is pretty much powering everything. I think internet is going to be powering most of your information within 5 years. We're going to see the cable TVs and the telephone services finally ripped out and replaced with internet service.
Do you see other... So right now, a lot of those services are either visual or they're auditory or they're something you can see on a screen or a browser. Do you see services coming into the home that ride on that backbone that are completely non-traditional web services? For example, I don't even know what, something that regulates your power or some other functionality like that. Or is it all just that? Or is it all stuff you could run on a browser?
I think it's all kinds of informational services. That's what I'm saying. It's not just browsing the web. It's anything that requires information to be sent now. And so there'll be all kinds of new services that we can't even imagine crop up in the next 5 years. And I don't think everything will be gone in 5 years. That's going to take a little longer because there's always a long tail of people. I mean, there's still people with coal-burning stoves to heat their houses in New England because that just still works in a lot of locations. And so, I think there will still be situations, especially in rural areas, where you'll have to have legacy hardware and legacy infrastructure. But I do think that the majority of services will be delivered over the internet. All of this sturm and drang about bandwidth caps and infrastructure rollout and access, we're going to resolve that. That's already coming to a head. The battle has been engaged, and it will be figured out. And, you know, people like to think doom and gloom. And it's possible that they're right, that the non-innovative side will win temporarily, and this will take a lot longer than I'm saying. But generally, when the momentum of consumer demand is mostly on one side, that's what inevitably happens. FM radio took a lot longer than it should have, but it happened. They tried to resist it. Color television took longer than it should have because they resisted it, but it happened. Talkies happened. Buggy whips went away. Automobiles happen. The consumers win in the end. It's all a matter of how long. And I think with internet time and with internet organization, that time period is speeding up. So when FM radio was developed in the 20s and took until the 50s to really start to get rolled out in the 60s to catch on, I think that time period is compressed. And we've already had the internet, you know, fairly well rolled out for over 10 years now. So it's getting a little late in the game for this transition to happen on internet time, and I think it's definitely going to happen.
So, part of it is infrastructure, right? Like the infrastructure shifting its focus away from this idea. I still think this persists, this idea that internet infrastructure is this weird premium, that it's this special stuff that you have to pay more for if you use too much of it. You know, it's got kind of a weird quantity limit feeling to it.
Because most of these problems are rhetorical, not functional. Right. When you talk to the people who know how to do this, it all can be done. And some of it needs investment. And so that's why it's rhetorical, because people are fighting over the best way to allocate the dollars and how fast to invest and roll it out. I mean, technically speaking, we could all have Fios all across the United States. It's just a lot more cost effective in New England to roll it out than it is in rural Wyoming. And so rural Wyoming may be among the last to get it because of that. And so that's, you know, that's something to keep in mind. But the fact of the matter is, we have the technical capability to provide plenty of bandwidth to everyone pretty much everywhere. And even in areas where it isn't feasible or possible to run direct wires, wireless can do a lot of things. Censorship attempts and attempts to crack down on bandwidth caps and control the internet to your own company's business advantage will be circumvented the way they've always been circumvented, whether it's mesh networking or some technology that I don't even know exists yet. The internet will find a way around it because people want to. And I know I'm sounding like a Pollyanna optimist here, but I've just seen this happen over and over and over. The graphical web was going to kill everything with advertising, and it didn't happen. AOL was going to ruin the internet because all the schlubs will subscribe to it, and all of the content will be locked behind the wall. That didn't happen. Microsoft is going to ruin browsing because Internet Explorer has too much of a demand, too much of an ability to push themselves on everyone, and they're going to shut down all kinds of innovative. Didn't happen. It all looked like it was going to happen at the time. There looked like there was no way Internet Explorer would not be the most dominant browser and Microsoft would control the browsing experience. But now look at it. Chrome and IE, neck and neck, both under 50%. We have more browser choice than ever. So don't count the internet out. It just takes them a while.
Yeah, damn your awesome pragmatism. I'm a huge believer in what you just said, and I believe that it's so. I'm one of those that gets. It's easy for me to get a little freaked out. So I'm watching Apple do their thing today, and my thought through the whole thing, and this will come up again in quick questions at the end of the show, four questions, but I kept having this feeling in my gut that, oh crap, they're about to change the paradigm. Not just them, everybody, because I'm hearing it from everyone, not just Apple, everybody, but they're up there on stage and I'm kind of feeling it more intensely because I'm kind of steeped in the OS X universe. They're taking away my desktop computing. Like, they are slowly ripping it out of my hands with some very compelling alternatives, you know? They're like, don't even talk about the desktop options. Let's just talk portability, and then the kind of power portably that we used to think was only possible on desktops. And there's this old guy in me going, you can't take away my big rig with my big stuff sitting on my desk. This is my place. This is what I do. And you're taking away my fort, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's a weird sensibility. Now, somebody wise recently reminded me of that. I don't remember who originally said it. Maybe you'll know. But this idea that we are terrified, or if you grow up with a certain technology, you just grew up with it and it was a ubiquitous thing. You didn't care. And all the old people in your life were terrified of it. If you are in your 20s and 30s, newer technologies just seems exciting to you. Like it's cutting edge and you can't wait for it to roll in. And then from like 40 on, that's when you start to get nervous about new things that come. And the kids have no idea. They love it. Whatever. They don't care. They want portability. They want all this stuff. So I have to keep reminding myself, I do not want to be that guy that sees this change and, you know, starts to freak out about it.
Get off my land!
But your idea that I could get everything, including whatever it is I needed via the internet as a backbone, and we quit looking at it as this boutique service and quit looking at it as a separate thing or a thing that's still kind of in the fringe a little bit or only available to a certain few or something like that. There still has this weird vibe about it. Instead, start seeing it the way we see power, which is like it's this ubiquitous service that we all have access to and have a right to have access to. And I'm not even talking politically here. I just mean it's an assumption in most civilized countries that you're going to have power today. And that's not true all over the world. And those are other conversations we can have about why that's true. But I want internet to become that. And then all the services I get are just things like, you know, I never sit around going, you know, I'm gonna pull the plug on my my hand crank toaster, get one of those plug it into the wall units. Yeah, I'm really thinking way ahead here. I don't want to think about that with internet anymore, TV or entertainment or anything else. I just want to think about there it is, plug it in, done.
Yeah, and honestly, delivery over the internet when properly done to the full capacity of our technological capability, is the most efficient for everyone. And telephone is finally succumbing. They are ripping out pot service right and left. It is definitely on the decline and on the wane. Television service is fighting its battle now. It's fighting the battle. If people don't remember that there were battles against VoIP. They tried to get Vonage outlawed. There were all kinds of court cases and bandwidth limitation cases where they were trying to kick VoIP off. And what happened was the telcos finally realized, wait a minute, we run the internet services. This makes much more sense if we provide the phone VoIP service, and then it costs us less. We don't have to maintain these old POTS networks. That's what they're doing. And I think the same will happen with video as well. I'm not saying exactly what shape it's going to take. We may be subscribing to our Comcast or Time Warner services over the internet, independent of whoever's delivering the internet. And there may be needing to be some regulatory separation of all of that. And those battles are yet to be fought. But I think the inevitable wait is that it makes more sense to deliver it over the internet. It makes more sense to figure out infrastructure, whatever it is, whatever technologies are rolled out. And there are enough innovators out there who are willing to come into the gap and say, hey, I'll provide you the bandwidth you need, that I think it's going to happen.
Yeah. One last thing I would throw at you. Do you think that eventually it's all metered? In other words, like electricity, this service that will be needed to have an infrastructure behind it.
Possibly,
all of that. It's just a metered thing where, oh, my internet bill this month is $300. It's so bad in the winter. You know what I mean?
Right. My internet bill is so high. It's so bad in the Game of Thrones season. possibly. It may. And everyone says, oh, but that's going to be really expensive. It won't be. The market will make sure it's not too expensive, just the way electricity is not too expensive. You know, you don't hear a lot of people saying, yeah, I'm canceling my electricity. Just got too pricey. Now, people will cut back on using certain, things and turning off lights and all of that. And that's fine. And that may happen. And none of us like that because we're used to unlimited. But we're not going to be paying $90 a month for television service anymore either. So, I think that Midnight Rider says, you are wrong. They are already complaining about what we are using now. No, I didn't say they aren't complaining now. They are. But I'm saying those complaints are going to be resolved because there's no real technical reason for them. And it will be figured out somehow. It may be metered. It may be bandwidth caps that you buy in chunks. I don't know. Reposter says, actually, no, you are long. Not wrong. So maybe that's it.
You are long. You're very long.
We are running long. So let's go to the long-term prediction. These are the longer view predictions. More than in 100 years, we'll all be in flying cars sorts of predictions. And I'll start with mine real quickly because this is the way we go back and forth.
This is how we do it, yep.
In 100 years, the boundary between organic and artificial life will have blurred to the point that our current thoughts and stories about robot wars will seem quaint and a little odd.
So, okay, let me make sure I got my head around it. You're saying that we will become so much more synthetic through augmentation, implants, whatever, and they and robots will become more organic to the point that it's just not... this feels pragmatic again, Tom. I feel some pragmatism coming on. We're going to have some kind of middle thing where it's not evil robots and it's also not evil human cyborgs. It's just us living and we all just happen to have cool tech in us and we just move on with our lives.
Yeah, there's artificial intelligence, but some of us have artificial intelligence implanted to get us through particular diseases, to aid us through mental problems. And some AIs have organic parts that are donated because they're more efficient. And 4 or 5 generations down the line, they look at it as it's almost racism to are you a robot or a human? We're all just existence. We have all different levels of existence. It's all good, man.
Well, my original prediction for this part, this long term, which I'm not doing, and I won't give you the whole thing, but it reminds me of what you've said. But I had this thought: what if we lived in the future, the next 100-200 years, where robots did everything humans needed to get done? So all of our resources are being mined, refined, and used by them to make things we need. All of our food's being farmed by them very efficiently. Everything we do, everything we need, clothes, everything, robots are doing it all. and people no longer have to die in wars. There are no more wars because the whole point of wars are to control territory, control oil production. But because the robots are doing it all and everybody's getting stuff fairly, somebody suggested to me that that idea in itself would be the new racism of the next couple of centuries.
Exactly.
Because we'd be treating these robots, a.k.a. a new artificial race, as substandard or as the workhorses of our...
Well, there is no them. We are them and they are us.
Right. So what do you say if somebody levies that complaint, that would be not racist, but that would be slavery? It's a form of life, even if they can't, they're not self-aware.
It's exactly right. There'll probably be some sort of civil rights movement. And then there'll be a generation that wonders why there was ever a debate. You know, what is the difference between a robot and a human? Where is the line anymore? I've got so many artificial parts in me. Am I a robot now suddenly? Or, you know, is it just because he's got a dermal implant, is he human now? And it'll just become something that we see as a false dichotomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably true. It's so funny to think of that because it informs, I guess this, I'm basically describing why we love science fiction. It makes us ask these questions. It's like Star Trek. It wasn't about, you know, the thing that was really going on the episode. It was about the underlying social thing that it was challenging. And when I think about things like this, robots doing that and us treating robots like subhumans or the things that just do all of our work and don't get paid for it, it just makes you think about how weird we are.
Yeah, there are machines, but they aren't intelligent. Anything that's intelligent is just there's no line. There's no difference. There is no robot. That's just sort of an outdated term, or it might apply to something that's you know, no AI. It's just a functioning mechanical, very mechanical thing.
It's like me stepping on an anthill versus shooting a dog. You know, they'll seem like two very different things to do to very different people. But really, I'm destroying two forms of life. One just happens to be a lot more intelligent than the other. I think that's, I don't know. We could have a whole show about that, but that kind of stuff's really interesting to me.
Also, your desktop.
I kind of hijacked your thing.
Yeah. Okay. No, but let's go ahead. Finish up your long-term prediction because this sounds interesting.
All right. So mine's a little bit different, but it deals again with humans and how well we get along. So in 100 years or so, maybe 200, all forms of long form travel, like airplane, train, ship, whatever, space travel, doesn't matter. We'll have pods where people get in. So this is like a huge ship. Imagine a giant plane and you get inside of each of these pods. There's one per person and immediately we're put to sleep. Just poof, we're out. That's like, well, maybe you have to push a button. But either way, you get into this thing and you are immediately hibernated and you don't have to you have food while you're in there. You don't have to do anything. You just are out. It's a permanent sleep if you never get out of there. And it's 100% safe. Let's just say that that's the case. We'll assume that. And you only wake up when you arrive where you're heading. So I'm going to Japan. I only wake up when I pull into Tokyo. So what does that do? It means that we can pack people like sardines in all kinds of ways and save energy for travel. That's one way. So instead of having spacious room in a big plane, 747 going across the sea, now we can all just cram into this thing because who cares? It doesn't matter because you're out. You're not uncomfortable. You're not worried about what your neighbor's doing. That guy's not bugging you because he's snoring. And those three babies behind you aren't crying. You're just good. And during that hibernation process, nothing bothers you. So when you get up, you're refreshed. You're good to go. No more fancy accommodations. Adequate space for everybody because, again, you don't need it. And I think the results are longer life because there's less stress. There'll be less war because people are less stressed. That's a bit of a jump, I know.
Might be more travel, too, because of this.
Maybe more travel, right? But all those anxieties that everybody has some level of, right? There's some, I don't care how often you fly, there is something about that process you don't like. It's the screaming kid. It's that I always have to wait in line for the bathroom. I don't like the Coke they just gave me. Or worse stuff like, I think we're going to crash. Or what's this turbulence? Or I swear I heard that guy in the back yell he has a bomb or something. Whatever your level of fear with these different things are, there's always something. And I never hear anybody go, I love flying today. Holy crap, it was the best day of my life. And the only people that say that are people that own their own jets. So forget those people. So the rest of us just cram us in. We don't care. As soon as we hit the pod, out. And maybe the pods happen outside of the actual aircraft. So you get into this like coffin-like thing that's standing upright, slam, you're out. Then they just got to shovel you in. And that's it. You're done. You're out. I think that would be a brilliant way to get around the world.
I want two things. I want resetting my circadian rhythms while I'm in that, while I'm in the pod.
All right.
So that when I wake up in Tokyo and it's 8 a.m, my body feels like it's 8 a.m. No more jet lag. Fix that.
Right.
That's chemical. It can be done. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know anything else. The other thing is more amorphous, but just like any other health benefits that can be provided while I'm asleep, you know, from everything from, you know, softening your skin, doing your nails for ladies to, you know, giving you some muscle tone or thinning your blood if you got high blood pressure, like a little medical aspect to it as well.
Well, you'd have to because you otherwise
give you a haircut.
You would atrophy. You'd have atrophy in all your muscles. You'd have a real problem otherwise. So yeah, it would have to include some kind of artificial stimulation of muscles, a way of sort of keeping you not from, you know, just turning into a soft buttery mass. Especially if you're going to be like long space flight. If we're going to get to Mars and it takes, I don't know, let's say then it takes 6 months to get there. Well, you need to be able to, you know, handle things like what are you going to do about waste? What are you going to do about all these sorts of things? So the tech would have to be really advanced to take care of that. But imagine what that would mean. I mean, we wouldn't even need teleportation anymore. And then it's just a matter of time. So it's like, oh, I got to be there, you know, next week by Thursday. Pfft, no problem. Australia's not very far. I'll leave on Tuesday. You hop in the thing. You're out. Pop out. Everyone's, g'day, mate. And you're there.
Yeah. It's actually how John Dvorak flies now. He's got the ability, he says, to just fall asleep as soon as the plane takes off and sleep all the way through until it lands. Yeah. So it's as if no time has passed.
Nobody would read anything, though. See, there are some downsides.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you wouldn't
do
as much.
That's why that's what I want, the ability for extra stuff to happen. So you get some other advantages that can make use of that time.
Teach you kung fu while you sleep.
Give you a tattoo.
Well, you kind of pick it before you go in and...
Yeah.
And okay, come out with a tramp stamp.
Yeah, exactly. I want it right here on my nose.
I'm going to go ahead and should I roll right into crazy?
Yeah, crazy ass prediction. One really far out there forecast, like in 2,000 years, we'll all be made of cheese or whatever. Time frame doesn't matter. Just take the leap.
I'm so glad you mentioned the cheese thing one more time.
One last time.
All right. Every single home, speaking of waste, in the far flung future, I don't even know what to assign to this year's wise, but will be run on waste-based fuel. So we can all be completely self-sufficient per home. And all it depends on is you having some form of waste, garbage. But I'm thinking other waste products like fingernails, old hair. It's kind of gross, but this kind of stuff.
Compostables.
We'll get to the point. We will get, yeah. But we'll get so good extracting core energy out of the smallest of items that a styrofoam cup will provide enough energy to drive your car for 3 weeks or something like that. Like that level of finite energy extraction.
Now here's
we'll
a
figure out a way to do it.
Here's a problem. What's right that? Off the bat. So instead of styrofoam cup, people are going to say, well, I don't use styrofoam cups. I use aluminum or I use recyclable plastic. What happens to resource consumption when you can't recycle? And let's not get into a long drawn out conversation about the efficiency of recycling. But the idea is that if I recycle plastic, then we have to make less plastic. And so it's less of a resource strain on society. But if I'm burning that for fuel, then all of a sudden we have to make more cups. Is there a new material that can be used, that can be made cheaply, and is maybe a byproduct of the personal fuel thing so that it can actually be printed out on your MakerBot and it's all like a closed system?
Well, this is how smart it would have to be. So I thought about that. It would have to be able to extract whatever energy you needed. But again, it would be so highly concentrated. It would be a matter of getting really good at just extracting the most raw of energy needs in such a concentrated form that one of those styrofoam cups gets you going for 3 weeks. But you've got 20 styrofoam cups you've used. This thing would be smart enough to say, all right, we've extracted the energy we need from that.
Nice.
The rest of this goes into recycling, true recycling, so that everything we use is going back to be either a thing like it or that thing itself. And that's where this becomes super efficient, because now you're not only getting the energy, I mean, you're still having a drain off of resources that goes to pure energy, but not enough that we couldn't keep making it. In other words, the world could be more sustainable. It could sustain that kind of consumption, because the rate would be so low and the recycling would be so high. But this all depends on this notion I have in my head, this mythical thing that in a cup there's 3 weeks of energy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how I get there, or I don't even have a theory to back that up. I don't have anything to back that up. In fact, I don't think it is based on anything other than my own stupid wish.
But 3 weeks, one cup is what you're saying.
Yeah. Three weeks, one cup. Fantastic meme on the internet. You guys go look at it. I actually shouldn't look at it at all. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if we could just, it's the Mr. Fusion on the front of the freaking DeLorean idea, really.
Yeah.
It's banana peels and shoelaces.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, that's why compostables.
There's something about that. I've always loved that.
Yeah, I like it too. All right. My crazy ass prediction is that we might get a space station on Mars. We're not going to get very far into the solar system at all, other than maybe some mining operations and some remote, digging and exploration. But humans will conquer dimensionality, and that will be the frontier that we actually make better use of. Space turns out to be much too hard, but we actually figure out how to move through dimensions, and therefore we can inhabit whole vistas that are unimaginable at this point.
What if we keep sucking this earth dry the way we are now, but in dimension 4 or 5, humans never took root on Earth and it's just full of resources?
Yep, new Earth.
That's a great idea.
Yep, and it's much easier to get to. You don't have to fly faster than light. You just slip rightwards at an angle, new dimension.
Like sliders.
Kind of like sliders. It doesn't have to necessarily be alternate universes, you know, like alternate Earths. It's just think of it like Flatland, right? So if you're a resident of Flatland and you're a square that just thinks you can only go forward, back, right, and left, and then all of a sudden you realize you could flip on your side and move up, you've got a whole new world to explore that's 4 times the size of the world you knew. But you don't have to spend a lot of energy to explore it.
I want to be Jerry O'Connell in this future, and you can be Gimli. You can be John Rhys-Davies.
How's that sound? I get to be Gimli. Thanks. Glowing sun. You know.
Sure, you have my axe. You can
now,
say before
it's not, but now it's people in the chat room are saying this too. It's not parallel worlds necessarily. There could be parallel worlds existing. I'm not going to rule that out. But some of it's just like totally unimaginable space.
Part of this is we need a reference point that is always fixed. So this Earth, this dimension where we figured out this tech, needs to be the place that we can always return to, and there's no confusion there. So when we go to endless possible infinite numbers of dimensional versions of the Earth, it's always back to this one point. Because we've talked about this on the show before, how criminals could jump dimensionally, and because they are kind of getting caught on one version of the Earth, they could fly to, they go to another one and take up crime there and sort of, you know, ruin that dimension and so forth. And you'd have all this crossover. It'd be confusing. Nobody know who, where anybody came from. But in your scenario, it'd be nice if we could just say home base is always that. It's always that coordinate. It's like the Stargate on Earth. And,
that's old man thinking, Scott. We don't need that reference point anymore. We have 11 dimensions to live in. Home base doesn't mean anything anymore. I grew up in the 10th dimension. I don't even know what Earth is.
What is Earth?
Yeah.
Nothing. That's what. Well, there you go. That's crazy ass predictions. And I'll bet you it might be time for 4 questions.
It certainly is.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is where we, for the very last time, ask 4 questions of each other, rapid fire style. We do not have time to think about it. We must answer these questions from the gut. Tom, I'll start with you with my questions. Are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
All right. That's weird to do that to you, but here we go. When will we have nothing but portable computing solutions and drop desktops forever?
2172.
Damn it. I mean, yay is what I meant.
Yeah, you'll be done.
Don't have to worry about it.
You're good.
Two. sounded kind of harsh. Two. What non-human mutant being has the best chance of winning the presidency eventually? Insectoid, amphibian, robotic/synthetic, or alien?
Amphibian. You know, it'll be a nostalgia movement.
All right. President Ribbit.
Yeah. President Frog Pants.
Perfect. Number 3. What year does Facebook implode and stop being irrelevant? Stop being relevant to social networking.
What 2017.
I shouldn't just ask for numbers, should I?
No, 20. I think. I don't think Facebook ever becomes totally irrelevant, actually. I think it'll be around for a good long time. But I think we may be seeing it at its peak right now.
Mm. All right. I'm going to hold you to that. Number four, final question. Flying car, flying train, or flying horse?
Oh, flying horse. Are you kidding me? Like, forget practical. You know, flying train is the practical answer, right? Most efficient. If you have enough people using it, it's going to work great. And it's essentially what we have with planes. They're sort of flying trains.
Basically.
Flying car is the dream, obviously, but flying horse, if I could have one. I mean,
I would have a, if I'm talking, forget about practicality or why I should do one or the other, the horse sounds like the way to go.
Have you seen my Pegasus?
You have answered correctly. I hand the reins over to you.
All right. Scott Johnson, are you sitting comfortably?
As comfortable as I'm ever going
to
be.
Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one. If you were to be made of cheese, what kind of cheese would you like to be made out of?
Oh, pepper jack, because I could just pick it myself all day, man. That stuff is awesome.
It's just enough spice.
Mm-hmm.
Question number two, how will robot cows play into our future?
How will they play into our future?
What role will robot cows play in humanity?
They will be utterly involved with governments. Utterly. Get it? Let's see.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Wow. I think that they will run the FDA and we'll never have to worry about mad cow disease again.
You know, only a robot cow could have created that regulation. People become a saying. Question number three. Why, in the future, will the term vat-grown be regarded so highly? You know, you see a label, ooh, vat-grown.
Vat-grown.
Is your pork vat-grown?
Here's what I think will
only
happen.
Only vat-grown meats served here.
In 1,000 years, when all of society has been destroyed and they are rebuilding it, at some point, scientists of the day will find a dig, and in that dig will be some old MP3 players that they could still extract data from. And they will hear this show and hear the term vat-grown meat so many times over 122 episodes that they will assume that the forefathers, the first men,
right,
will have known what to do and that it was the right thing to do, and they will develop it and it'll
I like this. I like this. It's sort of like, because ancient stuff always has that pattern of high quality, which is funny in some ways, but like vat-grown, like it used to be.
Yeah, like we'll find a rock and it looks a little funny shaped and we're sure it's like the greatest tool ever to happen during that era. And the guy who owned it was probably like, dude, it's a freaking rock.
That's just a rock. I don't know. It happened to look like an arrowhead, but you didn't see any of my actual arrowheads. They were much
better. Right.
All right. Final question. Final of the four questions. Scott Johnson.
Oh, am I ready for this? All right. Go ahead.
What heavenly bodies will humans occupy in 1,000 years?
Oh.
And I'm not, no model or actress jokes. I mean planets and moons.
Right. I was not going to go there. It will not be like a planet Kardashian will not be my answer. Plus, they're weird. I will say, what heavenly bodies? We will figure out a way to live not on Saturn, but in Saturn's rings.
Ah, I like it.
I've always thought this would be a cool idea.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big bunch of space, but also it's a lot of moving debris and things. And we'll figure out a way to plant entire, you know, countries worth of people's population in pods or in giant spheres or something that'll just nestle in there. And they'll always have the most incredible view of anything any human could ever see. And you'll just be in this ring and live there forever. And it'll be self-sustaining. I think that's where I want to live, in Saturn's rings.
Now, is it just Saturn's rings, or will that be like the farthest out we get, and we'll also have some other places?
I think it depends on what kind of travel we can muster up that's better than what we got now. Like, we got to have warp or something to go much further. But I feel like our solar system is going to, we are going to terraform where we can go quickly before we start going much further than that. Until we get ways to go further, faster, we're going to take what we can from what we've got.
But Mars is certainly up there. So we go to Mars. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We'll go to Mars. Mars is easy. Mars is just to figure out a way to get an atmosphere going and live in big biodomes. That's fine. That's not a problem. But Saturn is weird. The surface of Saturn is too crazy. Those rings.
Yeah. No, gas giants can't live on. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody, for watching our final forecast. Those in the live audience, if you've got a last prediction to throw out, we can rapid style kind of burn through some of them. Space Jockey starts us off. He predicts our future lives will be perfect because we will live them as patterns in a computer. Space Jockey, that may already be happening.
Right. You know what
is this wire sticking out of my head?
I'm going to miss all the emails we used to get or do get that are fantastic. Some of our best predictions, I would say, over the last 122 episodes have been emails from the site, either from the site comments or from emails. And those are awesome. I'm going to miss those. You'll probably still get those. Those will keep coming, I'm guessing.
I Am Bagels says, in 1,000 years, we will regret the advances of science because we did not leave room for evolution. Something will happen to kill 80% of the population.
Wow.
I'd argue that is evolution, just rather harsh.
Yeah, Web8995 says, I predict pineapple. I like that one. That's a pretty good one.
It's a good prediction. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll happen tonight.
Pretty solid.
I think it'll be meatballs. Ken from Chicago says, Earth orbit, moon, Mars, asteroids, Venus orbit, gas giants, moons. That's where we're going to live.
Then I will read this one, which is Titus says, in a millennium hence, Uranus will have hemorrhoids the size of volcanoes. That's pretty good.
Wow.
That's pretty good. I like a good butt joke. So,
I think that's a good place to leave this series.
Yeah, I think so. Why not end the entire series of shows on that note?
I think that is appropriate. Scott, thank you so much for being willing to take a flyer on this crazy idea that I had half in a dream one night, turning it into an audio podcast, taking it onto Twit, playing around with some great guests and a fantastic audience through 122 episodes. I can't thank you enough, man.
No, the pleasure was mine, and I don't know, the show is kind of emblematic of our relationship and our friendship, and I feel like that showed across all of those episodes. And while we have some cool stuff coming up, I will always look back on Forecast as one of the most intellectual things I've been able to do on the internet. It's the thing where I get to really pick my brain and pick other people's brains, and so I have you to thank for that. I'm glad you had that awesome idea in the middle of the night, and I can't wait for whatever harebrained idea you come up with next.
Oh, we got some good ones coming, folks. That's one of the reasons that, you know, we if we stop doing Forecast, it opens up a little bit of time to do better at the stuff we already do and do some other stuff. Sure. Scott, you've got stuff going on, Nerdtacular coming up. Anything you want to plug in particular?
Yeah, that's coming. That'll be here in a week and a half, and I'm getting stoked. There's a lot going on. I'm very excited. I'm actually more prepared than I've ever been, which maybe makes me more nervous than usual because I feel like I should be forgetting something, but we are on it. It's going to be great. Paul and Storm performing. Tom and Veronica there doing a panel. All kinds of fun stuff all day. For those out there who are coming, I can't wait to see you guys. I have more swag than I ever thought I would have to give away. Everybody walks away with some prize or another. So that's going on. But in the midst of all of that, all things Frog Pants still happening, still going. Go to frogpants.com. There's 7 or 8 shows that I produce over there, about 15 or 16 total that are on the network. And there's always something for somebody. You can check out our mega feed. And all the shows I produce, particularly, I would point your attention to our morning show, which airs 4 days a week. We have a blast on there. Tom appears on Wednesdays. It's the most fun anyone should be allowed to have. I do it with Brian Ibbett, host of Coverville, one of the nicest human beings in podcasting as well. You can find all of that and more at frogpants.com.
I love the morning stream. Check it out. If you're wondering what's going to happen in the forecast slot, starting July 2nd, frame rate will be happening at 3 p.m. Pacific time in this slot. And Twit's got a whole new schedule. If you go online, you can check it out, twit.tv. But thanks to Leo for letting us do the show for a big part of our run right here on Twit and for giving us a space. We really appreciate it. And thanks to each and every one of you for watching or listening. I know we've said, the listenership was dwindling. And so that sucks to be telling you that because you didn't go anywhere. You're here right now. You're watching or listening. We even have some folks who stuck around and watched us live in the audience. You win bigger than everybody.
But
really, seriously, we do appreciate it. And we're not going anywhere. We'll be on the internet doing all kinds of things. Autopilot show. I'll continue to do Tech News Today and Frame Rate right here. And more new things in the offing. So keep an eye on frogpants.com, tommerritt.com, and twit.tv, of course. And all the episodes from our entire run of Forecast will live on forever on the internet because you won't be able to get rid of them. They'll be on archive.org and all over the place. The easiest way to find them right now, if you're like, hey, I want to go catch some of the ones I missed, forecastpodcast.com. That's it for Forecast. We'll see you in the future.
Thank you, Tony.
Big thanks to Tony.
Thank you, Tony. And Jammer B.
But it's only 32 years away.
And that's it.
There you have it. Wait, I should say way at the end. I didn't say way again.
I know, for the first time we did say way. Oh, thanks, you guys.
Oh, that's too nice. Applause. Oh, never had that before. It felt good.
And now we made All About Android late, finally. That was another one of our goal, the bucket list for Forecast we had to tick off.
Yeah. Tell Eileen thank you for letting us marinate Jason and everybody late. That's nice of us.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, everybody. Thank you very much. That was a blast, Tom. That was a good time.
Yeah, that was fun. And thank you, Scott.
I feel immediately slightly saddened that we never tried this just me and you thing before, because that was way more fun than I thought it was. Not that I didn't think it was going to be fun. But
I was really dreading this episode, but wow, it turned out to be really fun.
It was somebody in the chat room said it best. I said, me and Tom should do this all the time. And somebody goes, what would you call it? East meets North? And I realized, it basically is East meets West.
I actually meant to say that. If you like this sort of thing, and Scott, you're always welcome on East Meets West. Roger Chang and I do a semi-regular show that's sort of experimental where we just talk about whatever. There's no format to it. Subbrilliant.com/EMW. It had a short run on Twit itself, but we didn't like having to have it scheduled. Ever since we started it, it's always been something we just do for fun. Yeah. But a lot of people enjoy it. So
it's a great show. It's also on the Frog Pants Mega Feed. If people want to catch it there, it's on there every week.
And we do it on Google Hangout so that anybody can join us anytime. That went great for the first couple months we did it. And then it sort of tailed off people jumping in. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if there's a way we can encourage more people to join in on the show. But I like that. It's fun when people join us. But it's always fun to do it with Roger, too.
Yep. I always vote for West. Just kidding.
It's not versus.
All right. Oh, it's not. Okay. You're just meeting. I get it. Thank you, chat room. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Tony. And thank you, All About Android, for being so patient. We'll talk to you guys later.
All About Android coming up next.